You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
Happy anniversary, Sean.
I mean, it was a while ago, but my wife and I are doing great after five. Oh, no, you don't mean that.
Nope.
Ah, yes.
I'm talking about a much longer, deeper relationship than your marriage.
I see. I guess I was going to say earlier this month, but I guess when this comes out, it's going to be August. But
yep.
Yes, mid-July was the 8th anniversary of our first episode being uploaded, and man, are we rolling in those theoretical internet dollars now.
Theoretical internet dollars, yes.
Oh, boy.
If we put together all 8 years of them, I think I could buy a PS Vita.
Oh, man. I mean, we mentioned last Dench email that we had quite a lift from the Angry Video Game Nerds.
Yes. Yes.
Newer videos, but that has since subsided, and it was
nice.
Good. It was good, but we're not quite there yet.
Didn't all right.
Quite reach that tipping point.
Need to be internet famous. thank you everyone for the people who've been with us all 8 years, and for those who are joining us now. In 8 years, we'll be thanking some people for being with us 16 years and you for being with us for 8 years.
Exactly, right?
Reflections? Thoughts?
I think we finally got this whole video making thing figured out.
Hey!
I think we're finally there.
And I think we got this podcasting thing down pretty well.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, even more so than the videos.
Maybe. So this podcast is Dench Email. So we're going to ramble about ourselves and our accomplishments for a little while, and then we're going to answer your questions.
Yeah.
So what have we accomplished recently? Well, we've had a video out.
We had a couple.
We had two videos out.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about one of them already, but I mean, we did a couple of stuff Vink sent me things because
yep.
Well, they're both a long time coming, really. And there are more yet, but you know these pretty much mark time until the next time we release something
yep.
bigger. But they've proven to be kind of successful. So the more recent one was Parodius, it's scary to think now. But I think I first played this game 3 years ago, and then like talked about that with you for a while, and then you sent me those games and like. 2013 when you visited for the summer, and then I just never played them for 2 years.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, clean out that pile of shame.
The most surprising thing is that you chose Salamander rather than Gradius.
Okay, wait. That's your fault.
What do you mean?
So you sent me a copy of Salamander because I asked for Parodius.
Well, I mean, there's Salamander-esque ones. I mean, there's definitely references to it, but I mean, the most common one and the one that the name is based off is, of course, Gradius. I figure you already had that.
I don't think I do, so that's why I used it.
I sent you Salamander because it's interesting because Salamander is way different from the English version of Life Force.
Is it? I didn't realize it was
way different.
Okay.
And it's got the coolest cart. Out there.
I think you may have also remembered that I was going to get a copy when we were both last in Tokyo, and I ended up not doing that for...
Yeah, because you were like,
money. I can just get the US version. No, it's different.
Yes, it is. That's a video in itself, so hold on to that.
Okay.
Because we'll... I mean, hey, but Twinbee, that was spot on. That was good.
Right. Well, that I recognize, but I didn't realize that the gameplay was so different. Well, it's not that different, but it's just like vertical versus horizontal shooting. Yeah. So no big deal, but.
I'd love to do a follow up with that because I've got the PC Engine one, which is a little closer to the arcade version. And I've got the Saturn one, which pretty much is the arcade version of that same.
Okay.
And I know. What's interesting is that Las Vegas dancer boss.
Yes.
In the Parodius was released in Europe actually.
Oh.
And it was also released for and also the Famicom version, which you didn't get to that part on it on the Famicom version you were playing.
Right, because I was so bad at it.
Yeah, but remember, Turbo isn't cheating, so play it on your twin.
I did use Turbo on the Game Boy version when I was playing on the Super Game Boy because I had that Turbo pad. Yeah.
Yep. But I mean, that makes it easier because if you shoot enough shots at once, the game slows down because it can't keep up with your bullet sprites. But what's interesting is I think they had probably planned on releasing it outside of Japan, or because I don't know, Japan's usually okay with content like that. But they changed the Vegas dancer to a clown, a G-rated clown.
Oh boy!
Rather than the scintillating PG-rated dancer that was in the Game Boy version. But the arcade version, others keep that intact. And the reason for that boss is funny and interesting, well, besides how it looks, is that it's using the same moves and attack patterns as this, like, metal crab boss from Gradius.
Okay. Someone else said spider, I thought. So
maybe.
I
don't know.
Both have eight legs, I think.
It's a boss you got to go under legs for.
Ah, crab battle. No.
It was a giant enemy crab.
Okay.
Or spider or lobster.
Something. Lobster. Probably not lobster.
Probably not lobster. People are writing right now. Definitely not lobster.
Is it a rock lobster?
No, it isn't. Okay.
I'm reaching now.
Woo. But anyway, but I liked the video. I thought it was really good. I like how your videos, when you start, you're like, I'm going to show some games. Wonder where this is going to go. And then it goes somewhere else. I like
that. Yeah, me too. So the next one's not going to be like that because it's fully recorded, but there was no gameplay. Because we're going to save that for an actual review of those games. So
okay.
Stay tuned.
Ooh, I am staying tuned. All right, and I'll be working on a video hopefully soon. As you can tell, my voice is just starting to come back right now.
Where did it go?
Away. Mm-hmm. I was out for a week working at a training camp. So I've been a bit away, recovering now, but hopefully Obon holiday is coming up. That's our summer break, about 5 days. So hopefully I can get some stuff recorded. But I picked up an Arkanoid 2 with controller.
Ooh, yes.
Remember we talked about that earlier?
Yes. That will bring us full circle to finish another video. Yes.
Yep. And I think we talked about that before, but I've got to get everything. I got to get everything hooked up, but by the time this podcast's out, hopefully I'll know, I'll be able to confirm or unconfirm whether we have another data recorder game.
Sweet.
So fingers crossed on that. I really hope it does work. I mean, I like Arkanoid, but I mean, getting one with the controller was a bit pricier than I expected. So, oh dear. First one with controller is not very pricey, but the second one with the special controller that has the port on the top, the only place I could find it was boxed and it was not super cheap. So I really hope this works. Otherwise, you know what? It's a nice collectible anyway. I like things with proprietary controllers that only work for them.
Oh dear.
I think it works with one other game. I don't remember, but one other Taito game. Something like that. Anyway. Yeah. Stuff.
Cool.
So stuff coming up. That's good.
Should we get straight to some questions then?
Let's get to some questions. Okay. Should we do some Facebook or some Twitter questions?
What's the better one to start with? I think maybe Twitter, because there's only was there more than the one Twitter question?
Yep.
Oh,
thanks,
I saw
Twitter.
One. Yeah.
I even posted that earlier on Twitter than I did. By the way, if you're looking for opportunities to ask us questions for Denshimail, you can. We occasionally do calls for questions on Facebook and Twitter, but also you can send us one anytime. Just give it a label like Denshimail question. We'll hold on to it until the next time we do one of these.
Sure. Or you can email us or even call us at 608-492-1923.
If you have an awesome voice. Or even if you don't, if you have a voice that is funny to us,
oh my,
yeah. Well, we'll figure out a way to incorporate it into the show. But let's move on to some of the. Wow, some of these questions are terrible.
No offense,
dear viewers. And some of them we've already answered on the podcast, so we're probably going to skip those. But oh, there's a few quite good ones. So, do the Twitter one first. Read it.
All right.
Choose a voice you think would be appropriate.
Choose a voice. So this one comes from apparently Boring Fox, although the actual Twitter handle is Larson John. He says, "Do either Sean or Vink have any stories about finding rare/uncommon games for way less than they're worth?" And I guess now I know what the fox says. That's a 2-year-old reference.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that only reached me about a year ago, so it's still new enough.
Oh, Japan.
That I would like to answer that. Ring, ding, 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 ding. Anyway. You want to go first?
Sure. I don't really have a good story of actually finding the game for less than it was worth, but I do have a story for finding the game that I thought was for less than it was worth and then ended up being wrong about it. How about that?
Sure.
How about that? So I was at Midwest Gaming Classic, April of this year. I do tend to find like a lot of games that I'm interested in, and I was going to do a video about that when it first happened, and it's probably a little bit late now, but one of those games was a Famicom Family Fitness game, and the most famous one, of course, being Stadium Events, which they did have there.
Yeah,
a PAL version for about $700, I believe, or $700 or $900, and it's like. I didn't notice it was a PAL version until I posted the picture to Twitter being like a little too much for my blood. But that would have been very embarrassing for someone to buy that and try and use it on their NES. And it wouldn't work because it has a different 10 NES chip than the one in America.
Yep.
Whoops.
And region locking. Hashtag.
Right.
And region retroactively and region locking.
So the one I got instead was Athletic World. And I think in my head, I thought like, you know, Stadium Events is so rare because like it was on the shelves. Nintendo bought the rights from Bandai for those, family trainer games as the NES, power pad. And, I knew that Athletic World had been out for longer, but I thought that there was still like a Nintendo rebranded version of that. But like I got home and like the only copy I had was a family fun fitness version. So like maybe that was the only one that was ever released. So I was like, yeah, I got this for $10 and maybe it's worth like 20. No.
wasn't that a rebranded, wasn't one of those, Takeshi game? Oh, wait, no, that was Super Team Games was originally a Takeshi's Challenge.
I don't...
Rebranded.
Think so.
Maybe it was just... I think it probably was just Athletic World. I mean,
there were Takeshi games, but I don't think we got either of them.
Yeah, we did. Super Team Games, I think.
Hold on. No, you're saying that, but I think that was like the third game in the series, and the Takeshi ones were like 9 and 10, I think, or 8 and 9.
Well... Let's find out.
Dude, I did a whole... Okay, so I did do a whole video for like those last three I didn't have. Because the other seven, most of those came over. Like, one of those was Dance Aerobics.
Yeah.
Which is actually not too bad of a game. Especially for the power pad. Seems like we gotta like do a video about this so that we don't get confused again, or I don't get confused again. Well, I guess maybe you too, assuming you are confused.
Yeah, I'm confused. It was Dai Undokai in Japan. So
okay, well, did I don't think that one came over at all, right?
Well, Dai Undokai came over to Super Team Games.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
There was another one. There was Street Cop, and I think it was called Manhattan Police in Japan. And I've been tracking down the games, all the Power Pad games in the U.S. And there was one called Explode, and I figured
that wasn't released in Japan.
Right. So I think we're all good for that now. We just got to like make the video. But
no, I hate making videos.
But again, that's. People might believe you. That stuff Vink sent me a video was basically like me playing these games the first time and trying them out because I'd never really seen them before, especially the Takeshi's Challenge or whatever the Takeshi ones. Very very strange. That's worth a watch. So I'll add that to the show notes. All right. How about you?
Oh gosh, so many. I mean, I live in Japan, the land of deals. You know. I mean, there's all kinds of smaller ones. Like the best place is you got to go to a game store that, or not even a game store, like a recycle shop that has no idea what they're doing. That's the best. It's bad because the games are all mixed together and there's no guarantee that they work because they're not being tested or anything. You know, they're just,
it's what people
bring in. But like a game shop, like everyone's like, go to Super Potato. Super Potato is awesome. No, Super Potato is terrible for deals. It's the worst possible deals because they know exactly what games are worth.
Yes.
So they'll have great selection and it'll be better than, of course, buying them on eBay in America. But in general, you're not going to find a steal there. You're going to find what they're worth. And the same is holds true for any other thing. But if you go to just a recycle shop that's basically like the Japan equivalent of a Goodwill, you've got people who the best place to find rare games is mixed in with the VHS tapes.
Wow.
You know, like they don't know so much that let's see. At one recycle shop, mixed in with the old pop CDs, I found a copy of the Famicom Disk System game Hikari Genji. It sells for about $40. I'd say $40.
Okay.
But they thought it was just a CD because it comes in a jewel case.
Oh my gosh!
It's the only Disk System game that comes in a jewel case. I will post pictures of it.
Okay.
I don't have the actual copy I had, which was pretty much pristine. Like, it had all the inserts and everything. But since they thought it was just a CD, apparently never opening it, or opening it and going, what is this? You know? Either way, I got it for $2.
Wow.
Another time, I got during the same shopping trip. Do you remember that old Famicom Dojo video where I found that copy of Rambo that had the hand-drawn maps inside?
Yes.
During that same trip, I found a copy of the compile shooter. Am I saying this right? It looks like Eleste, but I think Japanese people pronounce it Aresta.
Okay.
But it's a really good shooter. And it was in box for MSX. This is MSX, by the way. It was in box with a pristine manual and everything like that. Probably worth between $150 and $180.
Wow!
I bought it there for $3.
Wow!
I actually paid more for the Rambo game, which is worth much less. But I guess they figured, Rambo, that's a franchise. I think the Rambo game with the manual was still a good deal. It was a really good deal. Any MSX games that still have their cases are good deals, frankly.
Right?
I mean, because most loose carts go for about $10. So I got that one complete for like $5, and it made that nice video. But that one, yeah, it was like $3, and that's one of my best deals. There was a place that's long out of business now, but they used to, when they had things like, Wonder Swan, Famicom Disk System, Virtual Boy, or MSX games. They just had one price for all the games, no matter what they were.
Oh, wow.
For the Disk System, for the MSX games, it was $10. So there was junk in there that was worth nothing, like golf games and stuff. And then I also got my copy of Castlevania,
Sure.
And Metal Gear, which are both worth, money.
Well, hey, if you can go there again and get me a copy.
As I said, it's long out of business, probably for making business decisions like that. But I mean, they also had like Virtual Boy. They didn't care. Any loose game was any loose game. So, they had just your standard Mario Tennis there, but they also had some of the rare games, like that first person kind of horror adventure game. They had a copy of that for, nice. I think it was $8 or something. I don't know. Like, those are the best ones when they have absolutely no idea the value of the titles. So I found some really good deals, but good deals are harder and harder to get these days because a lot of the tiny game shops that didn't really know what was going on have gone out of business. And what's left are the franchise ones, Book Off and Mandrake and Super Potato and things like that. And all of them are chains, so they have databases of what games are worth.
Right.
So you don't stumble upon deals so much. In fact, you'll find the same prices at whichever store you go to. So there's right. not even like bargain hunting, and a lot of them also sell their stuff for the same price online. So there's not even much of a reason to go there. So it's unfortunate. I mean, I still occasionally find good deals, but in general, pricing has become a lot more consistent.
Yeah, I think even the days of finding something valuable like a Goodwill are gone, honestly.
Yeah. But, thanks, eBay.
Right, but what do I know?
I would love to hear people's finds, though. Please send them in. Let us know your greatest find, because I find that stuff fascinating. Swap meet stories and things like that. Yeah.
I should find out where there are ones around me, because I know like Pat the NES Punk and stuff go to
those. There's bound to be. All right. New story.
Okay. Next, we're going on to Facebook now. So Gareth Lipka wants to know, what kind of games would you let your kids play? He says his wife is a teacher and was talking about the FNAF series of games and it was appropriate
for
kids.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Okay.
You're familiar with those, right?
Yes.
I
feel like we've talked about that on the show before.
Very briefly,
on the podcast,
back when we did our interview about Retro Magazine,
yes,
was brought up as an example of a good horror game.
Yes,
I've played it. I've played it since then. It takes place in like a 80s or early 90s, like Chuck E. Cheese style with animatronic mascot characters, and I don't know. I find it to be a jump scare game.
Sure. What system was that for again?
PC. I don't know if it got console ports or not. It might have, but PC.
Okay.
They're short little games. There's four of them already. That series has only been around for like 2 years, and there's already four games.
Okay.
But I mean, it's indie. It's smaller, but it got huge on the internet because there's all these reaction videos of people because it's scary, but I don't know. It's definitely creepy. I don't know. It's a jump scare type game, so I don't think it leaves like the lasting horror feelings that like a Silent Hill game does. But
sure.
But since I'm a huge fan of things like, Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza or Rock of Fire Explosion, things like that, I like the atmosphere. I think it's cool. But for a kid, and I asked a follow up and. And like they were saying, it was like first grade students. No, that doesn't. No, I don't think that's appropriate at all. I don't know. I mean, I think as a parent of I have a daughter who's in kindergarten, so she'll be in first grade next year. I can't imagine putting her in front of that and letting. I mean, I'm not in favor of game censorship, but I am in favor of parental responsibility. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Let's take some Wii U games. Splatoon, that's rated 10 and up, okay?
Mm.
And my daughter's 5. But I play it with her. She doesn't actually play, she mostly just watches. You know, it involves guns, but it's paint, and you know, we've gone over many times that you know, nobody's actually getting hurt. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we've talked about how a real gun is something you would never point at anybody, even a toy one, you know.
Yeah, that's nothing to do with my kids who found both my zappers in my game room.
Exactly. And I think, and I mean, they understand the difference. You know, well, I mean, my two-year-old doesn't, but she's not interested in the game at all either, so she doesn't mm-hmm. even watch it. But, you know, at worst, she's going to go and attack a paint store someday. So, but at the same time, I don't let her play or even watch Smash.
Oh, interesting.
Because even though it's a bloodless fighting game, it still is just fighting, you know.
Right.
There, and she wants to play that. She's very interested in that. And when she gets a little older, I'll let her. But right now, it's a little too imitatable.
Mm.
And one of the scary things about Smash Brothers is that no character seems to feel any pain whatsoever.
Ah, yes.
Which to a young child encourages the idea that you can hit people and it's okay. You know. So that one I'm waiting a little bit of time for. It's the same with movies though. You know what I mean? PG right. movies are on a case by case basis.
Right.
You know,
someone bought my kids, a set of like planes from the movie Planes.
Yeah.
And, I figure, well, maybe he'd like to watch it. But you know, it's hard to like find a Disney movie that you can just like screen it for us before you buy it. So I just went and bought it, and because I figured I would like it, even though I didn't like Cars that much.
Mm.
And so like my wife and I watched it first to make sure that'd be okay for our 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And like we did show it to him, but he mostly asks, "Where's Dusty? What's Dusty doing?" Like, you know, all the more advanced humor is not accessible to him right now. He's just interested in seeing the planes fly around.
Yeah. I think that's okay.
Yeah.
So your call was it's okay to watch.
Yeah, planes, yeah.
I recently got Big Hero number 6 because I wanted to watch it.
Oh boy. The feels, I am told, are
It's a good movie, but there's a lot of maturity in that movie, and there's a lot of sadness, and there's a lot and there's a lot of peril. You know what I mean? Mm. Like it's not slapstick. You know, someone could get killed. You know, in what's going on in that movie, and someone does actually, but. She was interested because Baymax as a character is adorable. So for that movie, we've skipped around and we watched some Baymax scenes. But other than that, she hasn't seen the movie.
Okay.
And I don't know. Five Nights at Freddy's is popular with kids because it's something they're not supposed to see.
Like Leisure Suit Larry.
I suppose. I suppose. I remember when I was in junior high school, The Evil Dead was the movie everyone should have seen, you know. Yeah, right. You know, everybody I'm not that old. It was an old movie even then, okay?
And now there's going to be a series.
There is. I'm really looking forward to that but the thing is some things are not going to warp a child. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But at the same time, it's probably not something we should encourage. I don't believe there should be censorship of games, but I think if you as a parent feel that you can sit down with your kid and play the game and kind of explain your way through it, I don't think ratings matter at all.
Sure.
And if you as a parent, while you're playing it with your kid, go, maybe you shouldn't be seeing this, then I think that's a good time. That's a good time to turn it off. But the thing is, what I don't like is when parents will blindly go with the rating. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And go, they're old enough for this one. Put that one in. Because even some of the games that are rated E for everyone have a lot of violence or, you know, dark themes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I was playing Child of Light recently. Yes, I finally picked it up.
Ooh, nice, but, nice. On my pile of shame still, but...
Yeah, because my daughter loves games with female protagonists. You know what I
mean? Yes, yes.
But I was playing that one, and it's pretty dark.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you can't read, well, okay. For one thing, if you can't read to play this game, you can't have a hard time playing this game.
Yeah, I think. I mean, she wants to know what it's saying. She wants me to read it to her. But some of it, you know, she's like, why can't she find her dad? And I'm like, let's play Captain Toad. Because
nice.
That game isn't bloody. It isn't very violent, you know. But at the same time, I find that it's a fairly mature game.
Sure.
So, right. I guess my advice is for your wife who's a teacher, probably don't encourage the talking of Five Nights at Freddy's in school, because it's really not very appropriate, you know.
Right, right.
The content of it. There's far worse games. You know, there's far worse games. I would give it kind of, I know it's aimed at a mature thing, but it's more of a it's not for kids, but that's exactly the type of things kids like, things that aren't for kids.
Mm, right.
You know what I mean? It's mainly going to be a scary game because of, whoa, scary bear, you know. You know, it's not psychological horror.
So right, right.
Much. Although it's, you know, I'm going to take that. It has a very creepy atmosphere to begin with. I've only played part of the first one because I don't actually like games where things jump out and scare me. Yeah, there's not much your wife is going to be able to do about keeping it away, but probably don't encourage that kind of talk to be going on in class. Actually, to tell you the truth, if you're a first grade teacher, kids shouldn't be talking a ton about video games in class to begin with, you know. They should be learning geography.
Yeah, what are the names of all the capitals of all the states, right?
Yep, yep. Something. And they should be playing Carmen Sandiego and Oregon Trail. Those and Math Blaster. They should be playing Math Blaster. So my advice for your wife is get an Apple II for the classroom.
Yeah, Apple still gives away Mac, or not gives away, but like gives a good deal on Macs for classrooms, right?
They do.
No,
they do. Oh. Yes. So that's my advice. Okay, Sean. Next question.
Okay. Elijah Clark says, lately I have seen on the internet a Famicom add-on known as the Famicom modem. Would you guys happen to know what it is? And if you guys find one or already have one, could it possibly show up on a future episode of Famicom Dojo? I think yes, but the service doesn't work anymore, right? So it would just be kind of more of an academic thing.
I could get one. I mean, they're not that. They cost about $40.
Okay.
Boxed a little more. But I mean, they used to be way cheap. Like right after, like when I first got here, I probably could have gotten one for like $20.
Uh-huh.
But I wasn't, but like it, you know, there's a disclaimer right on the box. It's like, this will not work, you know?
Right.
It's only something to, it's like, I mean, it's even less useful than the Satellaview, because the Satellaview, at least if you still got the memory cards with games on them, you can play them. But, this thing, it basically connected to kind of a, you know, early 80s internet, kind of like what I used to do. You could check stocks, the weather, little bits of news.
You know, the kinds of things kids love.
Well, I think a lot of it was actually to be used for tracking stocks and stuff. And it had a very interesting controller that had a little keyboard on it. I don't know if you could send email or not, but since it had a alphabetic keyboard, I'm guessing you could. But at the same time, it probably didn't support kanji functionality. So you know what? I kind of want to get one. But the thing is, even if I got one, probably all it would do is take me to the main menu. If anything,
right.
it might not even do anything, because it was made for dial up and it's for a service that does not exist anymore. I should see if I could find a video of one working. It would be a very vintage video, you know. But it's not for playing video games. It's not, those didn't come along until the 16-bit generation, to actually play it's not even the internet, to play over the phone lines.
Right.
I mean, dang it, now I want to get one. I don't have any use for it at all, but I now I have to have one.
It makes the Famicom look neat.
You have a Super Famicom modem, I know, because I gave it to you.
Yes, I haven't done anything with that yet.
Yep, you got the X-Men. Now I wonder, I don't know if... No, you had to subscribe to the service to use it.
You have to have cards and stuff, too, which I don't think I have.
No.
What am I thinking of?
That's the Sega Saturn X-Band.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
So the Super Famicom one, you just would subscribe to the service, and then you'd connect pretty much directly to another person's house.
Okay.
I wonder if someone's found a way to make that work.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because, they found a way to make the Sega modem work.
Right, right.
I bet someone has figured that out. But the list of games that supported, there was only one game that was made for it. Weapon Lord. It wasn't made for it, but it mentioned it on the packaging.
Okay.
But the other ones were just kind of hacked in. It was games that were released before the X-Band was even out, like Street Fighter and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They just made it work with those games, you know. But
because
I wonder what the lag was like. I never played it at the time when it came out, because it was a subscription service, and I would never have been able to convince my parents to fork over $9 a month for me to play and tie up the phone line, because that's what it was. It would tie up the phone line while you were using it. Kids, internet used to tie up the phone line.
Hey kids, remember that when there used to be phone lines into your house?
I remember being almost done with a 2-hour download of Doom, the original Doom. Yes, it took me 2 hours to download it, but I was very nearly done, but then my mom picked up the phone and it canceled the download.
Oh my gosh.
So I had to start over.
That and pictures of Jenny McCarthy.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Jenny McCarthy. Yeah, probably. Anyway, I remember when downloading a picture file meant going to a Usenet group and getting the text in 4 different parts and using another program to put those parts together and then convert it to be a GIF or a JPEG or something. Oh, man.
Old internet was the best internet.
Nope. But then again.
Before podcasts.
Now, imagine if we had started Famicom Dojo a little earlier, when Famicom Dojo would have been a contemporary show about the Famicom. And new releases coming out for it. We would have released our podcast on audio cassettes.
I don't know what's happening with this case. There is one of those patent troll cases where a company that had tried to like release their audio cassette versions of like them basically just like reading news articles.
Yep.
On audio cassette. They figured out a way to do it over the internet, and now they say that they have a patent for all podcasts because it's like a unique, non-obvious use of audio over.
What?
Oh yeah.
So a non-obvious use of audio is conveying information.
Yep. I can't wait until we get sued.
Oh man.
Well, I think that particular case finally got halted, but I'm not sure.
That's crazy. By the way, I want to patent the conveyance of information via holograms.
So basically any lenticular cover ever.
Yes.
Is not prior art.
Correct.
Somehow. All right.
The use of buttons relating to electronic media.
I think for a lot of the stuff, like kind of like successful web comics, you have to go back to 1998 and then file your patent.
Don't.
I'm just guessing. Okay, we should move on.
Let's move on. Okay.
Moving on. Brandon Burdett writes, what are the most memorable soundtracks for you guys?
I'd be very
he's okay with the full episode, which it would probably take one.
Sorry.
Should we save that one?
Yeah, let's save that one. But give me a soundtrack you listened to recently.
I don't listen to soundtracks really anymore, but I mean, what games have good soundtracks?
Oh my gosh. That's a loaded question.
I recently
listened to the Jet Set Radio soundtrack.
Okay.
Again, great. I found a lot of artists I quite liked through that game, Chibo Mato and things like that. Mm-hmm. Very good. I got the Mother soundtrack, the first Mother game.
Okay.
Because I like it a lot, and I don't know what's my favorite. Okay, let's save it, because I have a row of them behind me right now, and I'd like to go through. But there's a lot of good ones. And if you go back even farther, and like Japan, what's nice is you can still get a lot of chiptune soundtracks.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean? Like, I think mainly soundtracks for video games became a thing in America once, like, you know, PlayStation era, I think. Maybe a little bit during the end of Super Famicom, but they were a thing all the way back to Famicom back in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can get, like, the Zelda soundtrack that's, like, chiptune Zelda, you know.
Nice.
Anyway, we'll talk.
Well, I think my notable one really is probably, like, I know in high school a friend of mine and I were writing up, like, full orchestra music sheets for Link to the Past music.
Oh, it's such a good soundtrack.
Actually convinced the orchestra teacher to let us try it out once. You know,
really?
We had like a regular practice, and it's like, let's just take 5 minutes and try this if anyone's interested. And it was neat. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But as far as what I've listened to, I mean, I know I bought a Metroid Prime soundtrack.
Yeah.
In Japan, like, I think it was in 2003. It must have been out by then, right? Or was that too early?
Was it you or was it Ben who bought the Final Fantasy Tactics soundtrack when we were?
That would be Ben.
Okay, that's a good soundtrack.
So that's all I got. That's
I got Shenmue. That's a good
song. Sure. I can't wait for the game to come out. PS4, baby.
I am playing Shenmue on the Dreamcast now. Did I tell you? I got it.
Yes. I've been watching the Facebook message chat between the two of you.
Yes, sorry. But thanks, Paul. Paul, thank you very much. I've been playing it. The memories, the feels. Oh, man. There's so much I forgot about the game. This is my first time playing it since I've actually lived in Japan.
Oh, sure, right?
So, like it's a different experience now.
Mm-hmm. It is a very accurate Living in Japan simulator. That's true.
It is. It really, really is. Oh, man. But I'm really, really enjoying it. Did the Dreamcast always sound like a jet engine taking off every time it loaded, or is mine broken?
Oh, I don't remember.
Like, I'm playing it later at night, so I don't want to turn the volume up too loud for fear of waking my kids. But like, but I have to turn it up pretty loud to get over the sound of the Dreamcast going.
That doesn't seem right.
Imitating Donald Duck. I don't know. It just sounds very loud.
Okay.
I wonder if mine is broken or just I don't recall that it was so loud. But anyway, I think it's because I'm using like Wii U and stuff, which is pretty silent.
No. Like if you go back to like my 10-year anniversary of the Dreamcast video, I don't think it was that loud. I think I actually like had the sounds of a game loading in it. So it's not supposed to be that loud. No.
Maybe mine is about to give up the ghost.
I mean, the good thing about, you know, even a Dreamcast is that you can replace it without losing really anything.
Yeah.
So that's good.
But anyway.
All right, moving on.
It's a question from Paul, the one who sent me the... the one who sent me the game. Thanks again, Paul.
He says, do you think VR will be the way of the future of gaming or a gimmick like motion controls? We are just thinking we are in the 90s again. Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Like virtual reality was such a thing in the 90s. There was even a whole series on TV.
VR Troopers.
Oh, I was thinking of VR 5.
Reboot.
Yeah. So, I mean, video games are already virtual reality. They're just VR 2. I guess 3 now with feedback on
Lawnmower Man.
But I mean, you know, he's specifically talking about like, you know, full immersion VR. Yeah. Which is the kind that is made fun of on shows like Red Dwarf.
Yep. And Community.
And oh god.
I loved that episode.
Jesus wept.
Yep. Oh, man.
It's like, they're constantly making fun of, like, because there was even like a VRML language for the internet, where you could turn your website into a virtual space where you could do physical things where, you know, the abstract way of moving a file, for instance. You didn't have to like physically go to a file cabinet and pick it up and move it over with your hands and drop it somewhere. It's like, copy, paste, done.
And I think, now don't get me wrong, I think it will be very interesting, and I've always wanted VR since I was a kid and first saw that idea, you know what I mean? But it's been tried, it's been tried a lot of times, and I don't know. I think it would have had a better chance 10 years ago.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Because we are moving so much towards the whole mobile space right now, making everything smaller, more personal, more that I don't know if headsets and gloves and, you know, the other, I mean, if it's a headset that allows you to look around in virtual space played with a controller, that might have some appeal. But frankly, if even 3D movies haven't taken off very much in the homes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that particular trend is dead.
And like, I think it has. I think it definitely has potential, but I don't, well, it just seems for the general mainstream consumer too involved.
Just talking about, like, you know, the Oculus Rift and like what's a Google's
or Google Microsoft? Google has Cardboard, Microsoft has HoloLens, Sony has Morpheus, Facebook has Oculus Rift.
Okay. I mean, I think there's possibly something there, but like the sets I've tried, like there was the engineering expo at the UW-Madison as it was every 2 years, and the two Oculus Rift sets I've tried have horrible, like you can see the pixels in the goggles, like maybe I think newer versions are better, but that kind of takes you out of it in the first place. Since it's supposed to be like a virtual reality, like a representation of your body would be nice. But like the one time I played and it's like, I could look at myself, but like, I'm much like real, more real than I actually am. That didn't help. But another one, I think this was also like a roller coaster type thing. I'm getting the two confused. Anyway. I did get a little bit of vertigo on it.
Yeah.
Despite the graphics being kind of poor. So that's the kind of thing you got to ask yourself. It's like, do you want to simulate reality so much that your game becomes unplayable because of literal physical reactions to being in those situations?
Yeah. And I mean, of course we also have, okay. When I was maybe 15 years old, so this is 1995, I went to Disney World. And they had the Innoventions. I don't know if that's still a thing, but it was like this, I don't know, science thingy. And they had virtual reality, like tour of a museum. And I remember going in there and thinking that was really, really cool. But after about 10 minutes, I'd had enough.
Sure.
And I don't know. And that was a multi-$1,000, you know, setup for, you know, for them. But I don't know. I don't know if I want virtual reality personally, because the type of game that I really like playing, I have a hard time seeing how it will work in VR. You know what I mean? I don't want a VR Mario game, because I don't want to actually have to jump. And if I'm just seeing a first person thing with glasses and still hitting a button for jump, then I don't know what the point is. I don't know.
It's probably worth mentioning that the 20th anniversary of the Virtual Boy is going to be coming up this month.
Yep.
And we will not have a video ready. I'm sorry, everyone.
Sorry. 21st. We're gonna have a video when Virtual Boy reaches drinking age.
That's right. At least in the U.S.
But I don't know. But the thing is, now saying this, I know I'm wrong. You know what I mean? Because I'm wrong about every prediction I make on this show.
Well, that's like the thing now, right?
Vink was wrong. No, I'm right as many times as I'm wrong. But
so, basically.
I think it will sell very well, but I don't know if it's going to have a lasting impact on video gaming.
Sure,
much like the Kinect sold fantastic, but it's all but dead now.
Sure. Like, you know, it went from being required for a system to you don't need it if you don't want it to. We're trying to reduce the price of the Xbox One, so we're not going to even packet it anymore.
Or the 3D on the 3DS. I turn it off almost all the time now. I rarely play it with it on. It gives me a headache if I play it too long.
Really?
And the 2DS doesn't even have it, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to buy into it early on, but it is up to the software development teams to make meaningful experiences for it.
So basically, if the Virtual Boy is any indication, it's always going to be niche.
I don't know. Like, if one of the console manufacturers is willing to bet the farm on it, do you know what I mean?
Man, I don't know.
Like, it is the proprietary display for their, you know, it is the required thing, like what Microsoft did, but don't back down.
Mm-hmm.
And have really compelling reasons to have it. That's the thing. If Kinect had really, really compelling games for it, people wouldn't have complained so much.
Right.
But the experiences were not up to what they needed to be to make people realize that this was the next step forward, that this was important. So if the thing is, I worry that if they blow it this time, they blow it for a long time. Do you know what I mean? Like when Virtual Boy blew it, it scared everyone away for 20 years.
Right.
But I mean, virtual reality in general, I can see a lot of cool experiences coming from it, but I don't think it's ever going to be the only experience.
Yeah, agreed.
Yep.
All right, I think maybe one more question.
Okay. Which one are you going to do?
Wrap it up. So, Kenton William Rice?
Kenton.
Kenton. What were some notable uses of the e-reader accessories for the GBA that only existed in Japan? I heard it perform much better and lived on longer in Japan than it did in the States or Europe. I actually do not know the answer to this question.
Okay. It performed better, but I don't know. Much better is... I don't know. And it lived longer, but... It had a few more games to support it. A notable one, maybe not notable, but notable for me because I'm a fan of the character, but they had a Domo-kun game.
Nice.
That had that was compatible with the e-reader. And they had more Animal Crossing stuff than we got in the United States. And in general, the Game Boy Advance was just more popular, you know.
Sure.
That you know, that helped a lot. But there still were not a ton of games that supported it. The Rockman games supported it here. Let's see. Mario versus Donkey Kong. Card. What are they? Did the Game & Watch ones come out in the United States?
I don't know. I don't think so. Phil would know.
Which things did you have for the e-reader?
I didn't have an e-reader.
What?
Yeah.
We've used it in a video.
I used Phil's. He's got a whole collection. It's nearly complete.
Well, that wasn't even yours?
No.
Oh, do you want an e-reader? I've got like 5 of them.
Not particularly. I mean, it was an interesting idea for the time, but like, you know, now there's the internet. So like in like a literal fashion, I think it was Mario Advance 3, which is what, Super Mario World? I don't remember exactly. Like, you know, there was essentially DLC.
Yeah.
For those cartridge games via the e-reader.
It's an amiibo. Although,
I'm not sure how that works because you can't have the e-reader in at the same time. Do you do a system link with the game?
You have to have two.
So you have to have two Game Boy Advances.
Because the e-reader, there's two versions of it in Japan and there's only one in America, but the first version of the e-reader in Japan No. It is still linked, but it wouldn't work with like the newer, it wouldn't work like with an SP. Because it like blocked one of the ports or something.
Yeah. Because they moved the link port connector throughput.
Yep.
On the SP, so it doesn't work. Yep.
So let's see. It worked with Pokemon Coliseum. It worked with Pokemon Pinball. It worked with Pokemon Battle E, Animal Crossing. It worked with Super Mario Advance, the Rockman series, and Rockman 03. But like. I guess that's one. I don't believe it worked with the Mega Man games in America. I don't think it did.
Okay.
No, it didn't. That's one. The Japanese version of F-Zero Falcon Densetsu, or what was it called in America? F-Zero GP Legend or something.
Yep.
That used e-cards with machines, courses, and like... And other things, in Japan, but not in the United States. So, I mean, there was more, but and of course, as I mentioned, the Domokun game. But for the most part, it still was. Wait, Pikmin. Pikmin 2. That used e-reader games. I don't remember what for. But
interesting.
So, you know, into the game. That's wow, Pikmin 2. That's a little bit later into the game, GameCube, isn't it?
Yeah, that was near the end, I think.
2004 or something.
Yeah, it's real close to the end.
Okay, well then, in that case, I guess it did carry on a little longer in Japan, but I don't know. I was in Japan during the e-reader, you know, era. And right. I don't remember seeing too many cards or anything being traded or moved around. I saw a few packs in stores, you know, next to their representative games. You know what I mean? But like sure. Compared to other trading card games that's going on, or even later things that used something like the e-reader, like Love and Berry, which had its own proprietary reader for the Nintendo DS, or Mushi King, which also had a card reader for the DS. Like, those things were much more common. You know, the cards, you know, you'd go to a game store and they'd have the cards on display and there'd be ones that were rare and ones that were common and things like that. And you could still find those things. But the e-reader stuff, like, as I said, I've got a whole bunch of e-readers but no cards. So I don't know. I never really understood the e-reader very much, personally. I know some people really, really liked it, but it never made me want to purchase it. I pick them up now because I can usually get them for about $1.
Wait. So you're incredulous that I didn't even own one, but you never owned one either.
What?
Before, like when it was a new thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, I just figured you were the kind of guy who'd have one.
I mean, no, that's not wrong. That's not wrong to make that assumption, but I never did get one, mostly because I had Phil to fall back on. So
I suppose, but I don't know. I guess because of those videos, I always thought you had one. And I thought it was your collected one from when you were younger.
No. I mean, it was interesting, I guess, but like I think the fact that you couldn't persist the game, like the e-reader lets you like save one game that you loaded up at a time, but there's like no saving data, right?
Correct.
There's no you can play those retro games, and now there's like virtual consoles. There's like basically no reason to have an e-reader.
I thought it was very cool how the games were actually stored as, you know, little you know, barcoded data. I thought that was really cool how they actually could transfer that much with just, what was it, a 32 KB game would be like on 5 cards.
But that also limited, you know, the kinds of games that actually could be in that format, because had to be like those early like Black Label card games.
I mean, theoretically, someone could make a homebrew game and print it and sell it today.
Oh God, that old man punch card joke becomes like suddenly very real.
But I mean, if someone could figure out I bet someone has. I'll have to do some research on this. I bet, you know, anything that's cool, obscure, and sounds like there'd be a much easier way to do it rather than doing that, someone's figured it out.
Oh sure.
But I'd have to look into that.
I mean, we have more important things to do, like, you know, learning how to program in WhoBasic so that we can do our data recorder, or so we can do our.
I'm getting pretty good.
Famicom Basic video, really.
I'm getting pretty good. I have made a few very, very simple programs, but I'm liking it. I don't have it hooked up right now, but I'll need to. I'm still trying to figure out how to put in the built-in sprites from the thing. So that I haven't done I haven't done anything with graphics yet. I'm kind of just figuring out the differences between it and AppleSoft Basic right now. One of the big ones, of course, is that it's not case sensitive.
Oh, it isn't.
It's all uppercase. You don't have it. You don't have a choice to do it any other way. So I keep hitting shift, expecting it will do something, and it does not. But just some of the syntax is a little bit different. But in general, it is Basic, and it is a functional version of Basic. I really need to get version 3, just so I can compare.
Right. Well, I have version 3.
Yes. Because
you sent me a copy.
Yes.
Where it languishes.
Where it languages. Sean's house, where retro games go to die.
Oh, no. All right. Good night, everybody. But in all seriousness, I think that's pretty good for a Denchi Mail. We'll be back with a regular episode again next week.
Yep.
And
a good one, too. A good one.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it, even though we've already recorded it.
yes. So you please look forward to it as well, and keep those questions rolling in.
Yeah, and then we'll keep working on videos and let you guys know when the next one shows up.
Yep, I think I'm gonna go buy a PlayStation Vita.
Yes, there's a reason I wanted you to do that too. Why was that? Someone else wanted you to, but I cannot remember. Oh, I know what it was.
What?
Sorry, I was trying to think of the name of the game. Shadow of Destiny? I forget what the other name for that is. Shadow of Memories, I think it's called in Japan. It's a fun PS2 time travel based game that we brought up in our time travel episode from I don't even know how long ago that was. Yeah. But maybe it's a PSP game. Darn it. They re-release it for PSP or PS Vita, I forget which, making it a little more contemporary. But man, that game is dated now. I try and play it, and it's really hard to get through the voice acting and the plastic looking characters. But it has some really interesting time travel concepts, so I've always wanted to do some kind of video review about it.
All right.
Anywho. Cool. All right, so I guess until next week, the dojo is?
Maybe going to be talking about a PS Vita?
Yay.
How about the dojo is appropriate to listen to as long as you supervise your kids and explain to them what's going on?
That's right.
See you, Sean.
All right, see ya.
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our music, Famicom Thrash and RPG, is performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter at Famicom Dojo, our free iTunes storefront, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. Visit our show notes, including links, video, and audio bonuses at famicomdojo.tv/podcast. Please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. And sponsor an episode or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network at littlepodcast.com.